5 o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show, a Football Friday edition. We are running out of our Football Fridays here for the 2020-2021 season.
One more.
Yeah, one more after today.
One more.
And we're done with Football Fridays for a while, which is a shame because I love Football Fridays. And it's a big one, Conference Championship Weekend. This segment, we're going to talk about the NFC. The next segment, we're going to talk about the AFC. We'll give you our predictions and everything that we think is going to happen. In the NFC, we know that Antonio Brown's not going to play. We know that Vita Vea is going to play for Tampa Bay. That's a big deal, I think, potentially in this game. At least he's going to be active for this game. We'll see how much he plays when it's all said and done. But who's kidding who? This is Aaron Rodgers. This is Tom Brady. This is one quarterback who is having maybe the best season of his career, is probably on the doorstep of yet another MVP, but at the same time has only been to one Super Bowl and has only won one Super Bowl. And on the other side of the equation, here's Tom Brady, who, love him, hate him, it's remarkable what he's doing. I mean, leaving New England, leaving the safety net of an organization where you know you're going to win and be good every single year, going out on your own, joining a team in Tampa Bay where you don't know that you're going to win every year, and yet he is now on the doorstep of, for the first time in 10 years, Gambo, leading a team to the Super Bowl when they didn't win their own division. That hasn't happened in 10 years. That's how good Brady's been this postseason.
You know, and you think that it's, you know, that teams with the wild card, you know, I remember the Giants doing it and other teams as a wild card going ahead. But boy, it's been such a long time. It really has. So, you know, hard to do. Hasn't happened in a long time. That would be an account. There's so many accomplishments if the Bucs are able to do it, right? They get to play at home, so they would do it at home. Nobody's ever done that. You have the whole Tom Brady thing, leaving New England, coming to Tampa Bay, and delivering a championship in his first year. My God, what would that do for his legacy? How much more would that increase his legacy? You know, and then you have these little side stories, like here's a team that's going to win it without winning a division, and that hasn't happened in a long time. So tons of really good side stories when it comes to, you know, Tampa Bay winning it. Probably more side stories with them than, you know, with anybody else.
Well, I think just because of Brady. I mean, just the, you know, I don't think it's not that unreasonable when the season began to think, yeah, Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, yeah, they could go to a Super Bowl. Sure, there was talent there. It was a good football team. We knew he was going to. It's not a total surprise that he has them here. But now that they're here on the doorstep of this moment, you start trying to put Tom Brady into context. And it's hard, man. It's hard to put Tom Brady into context because there's so much to process with what he's done and everything he's accomplished. And to think that he could be 60 minutes away from another Super Bowl and another conference championship, only this time with a different team and a different coach. And we haven't even talked about the Bruce Arians element of this. The one and only time as a head coach that Bruce Arians was in this position, he got his teeth kicked in against the Carolina Panthers when he was the coach of the Cardinals, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's a chance for a guy that we know and love in BA to, at least for him individually, kind of right or wrong, you know, and climb a mountain he wasn't able to climb before. That's a local angle we haven't even really thought of or talked about yet so far.
Well, you know, Leftwich and Todd Bowles and A.Q. Yep. Shipley's on that team. I mean, there's a lot of Cardinals connections, right? There's quite a few Cardinals. Deion Buchanan is on that team.
Kevin Minter's on that team. Yep.
Yeah, so there's that local angle as well. But it really all comes down to, you know, to Brady. Brady against Rodgers, and whether Brady can go on the road and win this game, you know, in Lambeau Field and take the Bucs to the Super Bowl, whether we'd be playing at home. And, you know, we talked earlier about guys that, you know, Brady can win leaving Belichick. You know, Shaq left Kobe and won, and then Kobe won without Shaq. And so there's these, you know, long history of guys that, you know, Montana left Bill Walsh, but then he couldn't win it in Kansas City. So there's those examples of, you know, guys that have left and weren't able to win and guys that left and were able to win. And obviously, I think for Brady, I'm not saying that this one would mean more to him than any of the others, but, man, it's got to be just a completely different feel that he wins it without Belichick, right? There has to
be.
Maybe it is. Maybe this one would mean more to him because of his age and because of, like, everything that he had to overcome. Don't forget, like, when he got there this year, that you couldn't practice. Like, there were no, there was no ability for Brady to have off-season workouts with his team. There was no ability to have preseason games with his team. So that adds a little bit more to it as well.
The Brady-Rodgers matchup is worth the price of admission alone. And it's a, and you sent me this terrific story on ESPN.com today in which it said, look, this is a matchup that we have been hoping for, wanting to see. We had several close calls. I mean, the only chance, in essence, for them to meet in the playoffs would have been a Super Bowl situation. Every single time we got close, not to blame Rodgers or the Packers, but they blew it. You know, the Packers couldn't seal the deal and couldn't finish it and get to that moment. But now that we're finally here, I mean, it's taken us a long time to get here, but in some ways this is a dream quarterback matchup, one that just took a little longer than we thought to get when it came to two of the best all time to play.
Yeah, I love the storylines of how, you know, how close, you know, they've come to playing, because there were three seasons, 2011, 2014, 2016, where New England held up their end of the bargain, but the Packers didn't hold up theirs. The Packers were 15-1 in 2011, lost to the Giants. The Giants then won the Super Bowl over the Patriots. 2014, the Packers were playing Seattle in the NFL title game. They had a 12-point lead late in the game. They blew it, and then the Patriots played the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. And in 2016, they were in the NFC Championship game against the Falcons, and they got rolled pretty good. And then the Falcons, with a really good team, jumped out to a 28-3 lead over the Patriots, but then weren't able to close the deal.
If the Packers are able to win this game, pressuring Brady is one of the things they're going to have to do. That's something you and I were talking about earlier, and that's something that Tom Brady has done a really, really good job of in avoiding this in a stretch that he's played recently, because his numbers the last six or seven games have been awfully, awfully good. And in large part because he's getting the ball out quick, he's getting the ball out on time. The deep pass has been there. It wasn't there last week for him, but it didn't need to be there last week for him. It was good enough for him to kind of dink and dunk and do that sort of thing. If he can get time and if he can be protected, that version of Brady is the version of Brady that hasn't lost very often this year. It's the other version of Brady where he's under a lot of duress, where he's vulnerable. That's kind of been Tom Brady's story his entire career, really.
Hasn't it?
And
yeah.
You can see it. It really has when you think about it. And that's been the story for him this year, too.
Yeah, I think the Giants were the perfect example. When they won those Super Bowls against them, you know, they, you know, with Osi Umenyora and Michael Strahan, they were able to get so much pressure on Brady, and he didn't play that well. And so the numbers really back it up. You sent me something today that, you know, completely backed up when, you know, pressure against no pressure. You know, when he's got pressure on him, he doesn't fare as well and his numbers aren't as good. But with no pressure, you know, he seems to do very well. So I think, you know, I think everybody that plays against Brady, you know, for 20 years has known that. You know, that seems to be the MO. Like, it's not like, oh, listen, here's a new thing. We just found it out. It's just easier said than done because of how quickly Brady gets rid of the football.
He does. He gets rid of it very fast. And yeah, the numbers are the picture that it paints. In 13 wins, including the playoffs, he's getting sacked one time per game, is pressured on like 14% of his dropbacks, his QBR is 82. In the five losses, the sacks jump to 2.2 per game, his pressure rate jumps to 27%, and his QBR is only 44. So it's not always one number or one thing, but it does seem like with Brady, that is the one thing. And then on the other equation, we talked a lot about Aaron Rodgers yesterday. We kind of all know what's on the line here for him. Older quarterback, 37 years old, says the rest of his career is a beautiful mystery. He doesn't know what's going to happen after this game. Should he lose, he joins a club that he's got the benefit of a Super Bowl ring, so he can So did Stabler. That's a good point.
Yeah, Stabler,
so did Stabler.
Won one.
But there's a group that he would join if he loses on Sunday. Avoiding the third quarterback, he would become the third quarterback to have fewer than two wins and more than three losses in a conference championship game. Kenny Stabler and Donovan McNabb are both 1-4 in this game, and that's exactly what Rodgers would be if he lost. I think that number gets muted a little because he's got the Super Bowl, but it will be something that will be part of the narrative of Aaron Rodgers, right? If he's only won one of these games out of the five that he's played in, I think that becomes part of his story to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think so, because it doesn't get you into that top category. Are you a Hall of Famer? Yeah. Are you going to set a ton of records? Yeah. You're going to set all the Packers records? Yeah. I mean, and you delivered a Super Bowl. Like, you'll always be loved. You delivered a Super Bowl. But there's always that, you know, should they have done more? Could that guy have done more? Why did he only win one championship? I mean, it's been so long since Rodgers won that title. And to think that they've been back to the playoffs all these times, and they, you know, we just mentioned 3 years where they got close, 2011, 2014, 2016. It's not like they, you know, they went to the playoffs and they didn't get back. He's there all the time. He just hasn't been able to get over that championship game, thing. So if he can win it, if you win this one and get his second one, well, then those losses don't matter as much, right? The losses in the championship game don't matter as much because he's got a second one to go with the first.
You've got the Packers?
I got the Packers, yeah. I just, you know, I don't, the Bucs, even when the Bucs at the end of the season, right, they weren't really beating a lot of good football teams. So I know they beat the hell out of them, but you know those games don't mean a damn thing. So I like the Packers to win this game. I don't know if it'll be close or if they'll blow them away, but I just find the Packers are just, to me, they're the better team. I think they'll win.
I've got the Packers, too. I don't feel great about it. I worry about their defense a little bit, and I wonder, I read something today that suggested that might be the worst unit on the field between these two teams, the Packers' defense. That makes me a little nervous about this, but I've said the Packers all week, and I'm going to stick with the Packers. I think Aaron Rodgers is playing at a high enough level that it's going to be very difficult for the Bucs to keep up with them on the scoreboard, despite how well they're playing. When we come back, turn our attention to the AFC Championship game. Looks like Patrick Mahomes is good to go. Is a good game good to go, or are the Chiefs going to roll and become the next dynasty in the NFL? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. It's not a dynasty, say, like what Tom Brady did with the New England Patriots for the last 20 years or so, but the Kansas City Chiefs are also on the verge of a little bit of history if they can win this weekend and then win 2 weeks from now. First, they have to get there, and a big piece to doing that cleared today, and that's Patrick Mahomes held a press conference and said that he has cleared concussion protocol and he is good to go.
Yeah, I actually just got out of the protocol. The week has just been a bunch of testing, a bunch of different things just to make sure that I'm good to go and there's no lingering effects and anything like that. But everything's been good, and I've went through what all the four different doctors have said, and everything's looked well, and I'm out of it now.
And now that we know that he's going to play and not Chad Henne, it makes it really hard to pick against the Chiefs to not only win this week, but to win in the Super Bowl and become the first repeat Super Bowl champs since the Patriots of 2003 and 2004.
What,
crazy to think it's been that long. Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't, because the Patriots have been so dominant, like, I don't know that I, without reading that, I don't know that I would have said. How long has it been? I don't know that I would have said that it's more than 10 years. Because it just seems like the Patriots have won so many damn Super Bowls. I can't imagine that it's been 17 years since they went back to back.
I would agree. I mean, you would have thought somewhere in there, in the midst of all that dominance, that they would have won back to back, right? I mean, you would have thought somewhere along the line. And I mean, look, I'm looking now at Super Bowl champions, okay? Patriots won it in 17 and in 19, but lost in 18 to the Eagles. So they had a chance at three straight, but thanks to Nick Foles, they weren't able to do it. The Patriots also won it in 2015 as well, but you would, that was the stretch, right? If there was going to be a team that was going to win back to back, you can blame the Philadelphia Eagles as being the team that kind of messed that up, because the Patriots could have been riding a three-game Super Bowl win streak had they not lost to Philly. But, I mean, I'm looking at it right now. I mean, okay, since the Patriots went back-to-back, it went just like this. Steelers, Colts, Giants, Steelers, Saints, Packers, Giants, Ravens, Seattle, New England, Denver, New England, Philly, New England, Kansas City. So there's your stretch right there. Out of 5 years for New England, but not back to back.
And crazy because we grew up with dynasties. And this is what the NFL wants, this, right? They would love for Buffalo to win the Super Bowl this year, or Tampa Bay, or just somebody different. They like that. The NFL likes the parity. They like every fan base to think that they've got a chance. And, you know, but we grew up, you know, I grew up with the Steelers winning, you know, the four Super Bowls. And the Cowboys had an era of dominance with Roger Staubach. Then they had another one with Troy Aikman where they won three. We had Bill Walsh with not only Joe Montana, but Steve Young. That was a dynasty. We grew up with dynasties. The Steelers, the Cowboys, the 49ers, they were dynasties. Yeah, there was the occasional team that would come in and win one of the Bears, right? They won it with Mike Ditka's team and Walter Payton and Jim McMahon, that defense. Yeah, they won that one. The Giants won two with Parcells. But we mainly grew up with a lot of dynasties. It was hard to knock off a dynasty. And the reason why, because those teams held on to those players. Now it's kind of hard to hold on to your team. With the cap and with free agency, it's more difficult to be a dynasty because every year you're up against it. Once players become really good, they want a lot of money, and you've got to pick and choose who you can keep and who you got to get rid of.
Yeah, and it has. It's made it tough. But if ever there were a team to do it, man, it looks like the Chiefs team is poised and ready to be that team. We've been talking about this since the beginning of the season. You know, this, and I think you've even got a bet with a few of our listeners for charity. I'll take the Chiefs. You guys have the field.
Right.
And I remember when you made that bet with some of our listeners, I'm always a field guy. Oh, man, you give me the field, I will take the field. I didn't take that bet with you back when you were kind of throwing it around. And I wanted to. I thought about it. And just about any other circumstance, I would have. And I which is why I have no earthly idea I'm picking the Bills to win this game. I mean, it's just pure gut hunch. The numbers don't point to me being right. The stats don't say I'm right. It's just a purely intuition, Josh Allen think he's going to do something amazing on Sunday kind of a pick. The numbers themselves, everything about the rational side of my brain says I should be picking the Kansas City Chiefs because it's the same logic I applied as to why I didn't take you up on that bet back in September. The Chiefs versus the field? Give me the Chiefs, man. They look like they're going to rattle off three out of the next 4 years. They're built for something like this.
But then they went out there and started to play all these close games. And then it was like, okay, are they just bored? Well, you know, what's going on? Because they, you know, it's been a long time since they beat anybody by more than 6 points. They've won all these games. But, man, they're just not beating anybody up, which makes you believe that they're vulnerable, that they could be beat because – you know, if you get them in a couple of mistakes, it's an advantage for you.
Yeah, and it's that boredom, you know, and people wondering whether that has really set in. Another stat that just speaks to the advantage the Chiefs have in this one. Actually, there's a bunch of them, which, again, I'm just baffled why I'm picking the Bills on this one. The Kansas City Chiefs are the 12th defending Super Bowl champ to host a conference championship game. The prior 11 teams went 10-1 in this moment. That's in favor of Kansas City. Let's see. Here's another one. The Bills have dropped back to pass 73% of the time so far this postseason. Only one team has ever reached a conference title game passing more often than the Bills, and that team lost in the AFC Championship game. It was the Patriots in 2015. Josh Allen is their leading rusher. Buffalo won last week with just 32 rush yards against the Ravens. They've got to find a better balance than that, I think, if they're going to be able to beat the Chiefs. Unless this thing just turns out into a shootout, right?
Yeah, I'm just – because you know what? Playoffs, they always say you got to be able to run in the playoffs. You have to be able to run. The weather gets cold, you got to be able to run. And the Bills are winning without running. They're winning by just dropping back and throwing the ball 3 out of 4 times. And it's just like, it kind of goes against, you know, what you're led to believe and what we've seen for so many years. They don't run the ball. And Kansas City can run the ball. So, you know, can they keep that up? Can they go 2 more games with that? Or can they get committed to running the football? I mean, can they surprise some people and run it more? But it really is, shocking when you look at how little they've run the ball, especially in the last couple of games.
I guess part of the reason why I'm going with the Bills on this one, and I know you're obviously going with the Chiefs, is it's the Josh Allen effect and that Kansas City defense. Not a huge believer in them. I'm not a huge believer in them in the red zone. Not a huge believer in them with the ability to rush the passer. They struggled with that a little bit last week against Baker Mayfield. I just kind of feel like Josh Allen might have an opportunity to put a lot of points up on the board. Now, Kansas City certainly can keep up with them. But I feel like if there's a team that might be able to hang touchdown for touchdown with the Kansas City Chiefs, it's Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. And I don't know, I feel like I got to pick something unusual to happen this weekend. So I'm going with the Bills, but I assume you're sticking with the Chiefs, yes?
Yeah, but I could see myself rooting for the Bills and not caring if I lose some of these, you know, these bets. I mean, I really can. I mean, that would be such a great story, you know, if the Bills were able to win it and Josh Allen has done such a good job. And it's Buffalo, right? I mean, it's... You know, they haven't had the success. And they've had as much heartbreak as anybody. I mean, they went to 4 Super Bowls with Marv Levy, and they had great teams. Thurman Thomas and Andre Reed and Jim Kelly and Cornelius Bennett and Bruce Smith. I mean, I can name that whole damn team. And Scott Norwood missed the field goal against the Giants, and they got blown out in the other three. So, like, it's been a long-suffering fan base. I could be happy for that team, that organization to win. I really could.
The Arizona Cardinals, a lot of questions that need to be answered this offseason, and there's a blueprint, potentially, for them to follow as to how to get there. Some of them are obvious, some not so much. We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. As always, thank you for hanging out with us on this Friday afternoon here on Burns and Gambo. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, going into a football weekend, a busy NBA weekend for the Suns. Back-to-back games against the Denver Nuggets. The Coyotes back in action tonight as well. A lot going on, and we'll be back on Monday,
struggled.
Of course. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, Darcy Kuemper. No wins for Darcy Kuemper. 3 games. They haven't got a win for Kuemper yet.
Yeah, we'll see how they do tonight. We'll have a lot to talk about on Monday when we're back here, including, of course, the Super Bowl 55 matchup. The Cards, this was – I really enjoyed this story, and I know you did too. This was from our buddies over at RevengeOfTheBirds.com. And consider it, if you will, a blueprint for, and it's just one possible blueprint of how the Cardinals can manage their offseason until free agency starts. But this one's kind of a step by step, okay, do this, and then do this, and then do that, and then do this. And I think we need to go through it because I think there's a lot of interesting kind of ideas as to how the Cardinals can do what they need to do this offseason. You ready for this?
Ready, let's do it.
Number one, it's easy. And like I said, some of these are easier than others. Number one, the Larry Fitzgerald decision, it might be made for them if Fitz decides to retire. But if he decides to come back, you got to kind of figure out how much money to give Larry Fitzgerald at age 38. But that's number one on the blueprint. Figure out what Larry Fitzgerald is going to do and move forward from there.
I don't think that's the most difficult thing. I've told you that a few times. I mean, look, he's not going to expect $11 million, and they're not going to pay him $11 million, but they could give him a deal. For half of that with some incentives where if he, you know, plays well, he could make more money. And I don't think, look, Fitz is a businessman. He knows that, you know, after the year he just had, he's not going to come in and command $11 million. And if he wants to play, it's not going to be as much about the money as it is about he still wants to play. So I think that can get worked out.
All right. I think you're right. I hope you're right. I hope that if he does want to come back, then suddenly we're not faced with the prospect of him wanting $11 million because that could become a very awkward conversation for the Cards and Larry Fitzgerald.
They may want it, but he does.
I hope he shouldn't get it. I mean, we all love Fitz. Everybody loves Fitz. You can't give him $11 million next year if he wants to come back. You can't do that if you're the Cardinals. So let's see where that goes. But hopefully that's an easier conversation, and maybe he just retires and it's not a conversation at all. Number two. We've talked about this one in the past. This one is also fairly simple. Clearing out cap casualties. There are guys like Devon Kennard. You know he's not going to be back. Robert Alford. You know he's not going to be back. Guys that are easy decisions to cut to save money. Some players, it's a little more complex. Max Williams is a little more complex. You can save $3 million by letting him go. And he was hurt a lot last year. But when he's healthy, he's a good football player who really helps the Cardinals win football games. So you have to think about what you want to do with him, weigh the savings on the cap against the production you get from a guy if he's healthy, and figure out what the best decision is.
Yeah, listen, can you get somebody for that much cheaper? I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure that you can get somebody that much cheaper. So I like him. He's a good blocker. He can catch the ball on a kick. You got your catching tight end in Dan Arnold. Now, if you say, hey, listen, there's several guys out there that I can get and save $1 million that are good blocking tight ends, then, you know, that might be an option that you go with, and especially with Max not being healthy this year. So that's a tougher one. I prefer that they keep him. I really do. I prefer they keep him.
All right, number three. Notable extensions to gain cap room. Guys who are near... This is a tough one.
You know, I hate this. Guys, yeah, I hate this. Yeah. But go ahead. Because it happens.
Yeah, it does. Guys who are nearing the end of their deals, and you realize you can save money on the cap now by extending their contracts. The two guys that were named in particular in this article were Chandler Jones. He's got a year left on his deal with a $21 million cap hit. And Justin Pugh, who's got 2 years left on his deal with $11 and $12 million cap numbers remaining. Do you extend either one of those guys or both to create cap space now?
I'm not a big believer in both, you know, and I could see doing one because remember, as we always say, like you're kicking it down the road, right? You're kicking a can down the road. Eventually, you're going to end up with some dead money on your cap that's going to affect future teams because you're going to have dead money on a cap somewhere when you do stuff like this, very likely. So, I mean, I think even in that article I mentioned, you know, Pugh's done a good job and you want to keep him. He has. I mean, he's been a steady, solid player for them. I like him. I would be okay with one of them. Now, remember, you got to try to win this year. There's a lot on the line for Cliff and Kyler and Steve. I mean, there's a lot on the line. So, you know, if you feel like, hey, if I could free up $5 million by doing this, well, then I'm in a better spot to add some players that can help us win. But then maybe you got to do it. I wouldn't push too much money down the road.
Yeah, it's a thing you got to be really, really careful with. But the pressure this year, it changes the equation. Number four, this to me is a fascinating one: the Hassan Reddick decision to tag or not to tag. To be or not to be. That is the question. Tag him. And yes, he's going to be a very expensive player on a one-year deal, but you've also bought yourself insurance that protects against the one-year wonder phenomenon, right? Like if this past year was a fluke for him and you tag him and he doesn't put up good numbers, well, then the worst you've done is you've given up 1 year of salary cap space to him and you can move on with a clear conscience and you're not tied to him beyond that. But if you extend him, all right, and it was just a one-year wonder for him, now you're stuck with him for a couple of years, and he's chewing up cap space in 2022 and maybe 2023. So to extend or not, you know, do you – because if you extend him, you know, if you give him a long-term deal, you'll save yourself cap space this year by not franchise tagging him, but then you're stuck with him, and if he's a one-hit wonder – you're kind of screwed the year after next. This is a really tricky decision with Reddick.
You know, with the one-hit wonders, it's always better if you're the team. If you're the team that has him because you know more about him, what's his work ethic? How much does he care? How much time is he spending in the weight room? How much time is he spending in the study room? Is he coachable? Is this his pay? Like, you know. The guy on the other team that you're getting, you don't know. I mean, you look at film, you talk to some people, and you make a decision. But when he's your own guy, you know, if you retain him, that's because you believe in him. Like, you believe that that wasn't a fluke. You believe that he broke out and that everything kind of came together for him and he just needed maturity. So I do think it's an easier decision when you're keeping your own guy than when you're going to get somebody else's one-hit wonder.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, and you're right. If you tag him, and here's the nightmare scenario. You tag him, he has a great year. And now you want to keep him after you tag him. You know, and then, oh, man, we should have just kept him a year ago, right? We should have just signed him to a four-year contract a year ago rather than tagging him and signing him to another four-year contract because then it just becomes more expensive and you chewed up all your cap space. But I do think what you're saying, there's a lot of truth to that, you know, that players like Hassan Reddick, you know, sometimes they don't even hit the open market because the team that has him knows what they've got in him.
Yeah.
And they want to keep him desperately. What they do with him is a really big question mark. And then number five, and this was in some ways our favorite one, explore the trade market ahead of free agency looking for a starting cornerback. And they used the DeAndre Hopkins trade last year as an example. By trading for him, the Cards didn't have to draft a wide receiver, and they didn't have to sign one in free agency. They had one. They were good. And Revenge of the Birds is suggesting they basically do the same thing at cornerback. Target teams that are way over the salary cap, the Saints, the Eagles, the Falcons, who will need to cut players. See if they've got any cornerbacks. Call them up. Offer them a third-round pick, a fourth-round pick. See if you can get one of their corners that they might want to shed because they're so far over the cap, they're going to have to shed those guys anyway, and they might be willing to do it for a draft pick. That might be a way to get a cornerback before free agency even starts to make you feel a little bit better about the position moving forward.
You know, just because the guy's the fourth best cornerback on his team, you know, doesn't mean that he couldn't be the second best cornerback on your team or the third best cornerback on your team or maybe the fifth best cornerback. Some teams are loaded. They're stacked at one position, and it's a luxury to have that other guy. But they just can't pay everybody, and they can't get off of that guy the playing time. And so there's some guy that's a fifth cornerback on another team that could be your third cornerback. And that's where you got to just be smart. You got to know the rosters, and you got to know the teams. And, you know, sometimes you can make a trade. And that team might say, listen, I've got three other corners or four other corners that are really good, but, man, I'm missing a wide receiver. I'd rather have a draft pick and get a wide receiver and give this guy up.
For the record, those teams, six teams at $20 million or more over the cap, the Saints, the Eagles, the Falcons, the Rams, and they probably wouldn't deal with the Cardinals in a situation like this, the Steelers and the Packers are all at least $20 million over the salary cap and might be looking to pare down their roster. And among those teams, there are some decent cornerback options. I don't think you're going to find a number one corner this way, but a guy who could be, like you say, a number two, a number three, this might be the way to be able to do that potentially. Again, this is not the only blueprint for an offseason, but it's an interesting way for the Cardinals to get from point A to point B, have some money to spend, address some needs, and still be able to go out and improve a team, because this is a, you know, they're all vitally important, but this is a vitally important offseason for the Cardinals, and everybody knows it.
Yeah. I think that they'll be able to free up some money. It's just, again, you're freeing up money for what? Like, what are you freeing up money for? You're freeing up money for, you know, for free agency, which is a crapshoot. And that's the tough part, because, you know, you look at the three guys they signed last year, and we were, oh, this is great. I mean, wow, Jordan Phillips, 9.5 sacks, and Kennard at 7, and this is going to be fantastic, and it didn't play out that way. And it's so there is a frustrating part of it, and you just got to be, you know, super careful. And, you know, do you go after one great player at one position, or do you spread that money out a little bit? That's always a tough call, you know, what to do. And I'm not, you know, again, I'm not really sure what the best angle is, but I think a lot of it is going to depend on, for them, What are they doing with Hassan Reddick? What are they doing with Pat Pete? What are they doing with these guys? Because if they have some holes to fill, they're going to have to fill them.
A true hero, a true icon we lost today in the world of sports. Hank Aaron passed away at the age of 86. Our thoughts on the baseball legend coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, it's the Coors Light What's On Tonight, the games that we're going to watch this evening, brought to you by our good friends at Coors Light. A couple of local teams, both in action tonight. Golden Knights are here in town in Glendale, taking on the Coyotes. Puck drop there.
Haven't lost yet, I don't think.
7 o'clock. I don't think they have.
So good. They're just so good.
Right there.
They're really good. They put a whooping on the Coyotes a couple of nights ago, and this is, what, game three now of a four-game?
Yeah, you'll be happy when you don't have to play them anymore.
Yeah, I'll be very glad to see the Vegas Golden Knights go on and off the schedule. But this is game three of four. They play again, I believe, on Sunday as part of like this four-game pod. And that's at Gila River Arena. And then, of course, tonight at Phoenix Suns Arena. And I'm still getting used to saying that. The Nuggets are at the Suns. That's an 8 o'clock tip time, a little bit of a late one. You'll hear it here on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. And we'll see if – and they, too – are in like a little scheduling pod with the Nuggets. They're playing Denver tonight, and they're playing them again tomorrow, both in downtown Phoenix. So kind of that scheduling quirk when it comes to COVID and all of that. So that's what's coming up tonight. That's what's to watch tonight. Conference championship games on Sunday, another Suns game coming up on Saturday night. A lot going on this weekend. We'll be back on Monday to talk about all of it. Of course.
Yeah, Monday will be a busy day.
Yeah, Monday
will
be a
busy day. Couple of Suns games and two football games. Monday will be a busy day.
And Super Bowl 55, the matchup that will be in front of us. Today was sad day, and it's the kind of news that, I don't know about you, I got on the computer and I started looking to see what was going on in the world, and everything was just Hank Aaron. An icon like that loses his life at the age of 86, somebody who transcended baseball, who transcended sport, who, you know, was one of those names that was just so big that it's not just about a baseball player who passed away because they were 86. It's Hank Aaron was a cultural icon. And as such, you are seeing everybody around the sports world and frankly the world who are reacting to the passing of Hank Aaron today.
Look, one of the first things I did was, and I think I've done this before with him, but I showed my son Hank Aaron's record-breaking home run. Easy to find, right? Just go to YouTube and Hank Aaron's record-breaking home run. And I showed it to him and talked to him about the importance of it. And then, you know, I sat there with Chelsea and I said, look, this, in my opinion, this is what makes baseball the greatest sport in the world, is because these records are just so cherished. And you don't have this in other sports. You don't have that in other sports. You know, Babe Ruth's record being broken by Roger Maris, and then Hank Aaron, you know, breaking that record. And then, so to me, the records are what, you know, make, you know, Lou Brock with the stolen bases and all of that. So 300 wins and 3,000 strikeouts and 500 home runs get you into Hall of Fame unless you're Mark McGwire. Like, those numbers, they just mean something. So I was, you know, I was excited to show my son the record-breaking home run by Hank Aaron. And he was like, wow, people ran on the field. Yep, a couple people ran on the field and they were there. Yeah. And, you know, just explain, you know, that to him and show him and share that, you know, just share that with him that, hey, and then listen to the call, you know, the calls. There's a new home run champion of all time and it's Henry Aaron. Like, the calls are fantastic. Like, and again, you just don't have that in the other sports the way you do in baseball.
No, I don't think so. There's a nostalgia to the history of baseball that I don't think is as strong as it is in the other sports. I think that's certainly one real strength in baseball's favor, is that it's got a romanticism throughout the history of our lives and our country that I just don't know if the other sports quite possess to the same level. Baseball might not be as popular today as it once was back then, but certainly moments like that will literally live on forever. I'm looking at a tweet from Vin Scully, and yes, Vin Scully is on Twitter, and he says it was a privilege to witness Hank Aaron's historic moment, and he retweeted the play, the home run, in which he had the call for. We had Tim Kirchen on our show earlier talking about Hank Aaron and not only being one of the best players of all time, but then told this great story about talking with Hank Aaron in the broadcast booth.
It was the greatest night of my professional life, getting to talk to Hank Aaron for four innings, an hour and a half next to Hank Aaron. He was so kind. He was so gentle. He was so funny. And his recall was unbelievable. And the stories he told were just incredible. And at the end, after the game was over, I shouldn't have done this, but I looked at Twitter and somebody wrote on Twitter, he said, if anyone ever looks at you like Tim Kirchen looked at Hank Aaron tonight, you should marry that person.
Wow.
That's how revered that's the reverence that Hank Aaron got from me, but he got it from everyone that he dealt with along the way.
I found the tweet.
Did you really?
Sure enough.
Oh
yeah,
great.
Sure. Sure enough, there's like two screenshots of Tim Kirchen looking at Hank Aaron, and he is. He's looking at him with, "I love you. I love you. You're the best. I love you." He's one of those players that just being completely honest here, I almost wish I was a little older So I would have been able to watch them in their prime, to experience that in its prime, right? I mean, it's there's only so much you can watch on a YouTube video, and I think we all, no matter how old you are, you could be 22, you could be 42, you could be 62. You're going to be able to say, man, I wish I was able to watch that guy in his prime. And for me, I think Hank Aaron would definitely be on the short list of guys for me that I wish I was able to watch in his prime, especially, and I know I've talked about this a few times today, that moment where he breaks Babe Ruth's record. It was such a tumultuous time in sports and the world. He was getting death threats. He was getting hate mail. His teammates would joke with him that the black players on the team didn't want to sit anywhere near him in case, you know, he got assassinated and they couldn't tell, you know, which one am I shooting? Who am I shooting at? You know, I read the quote directly from the story, but it was they used to joke about that on the team that there was a real threat about him losing his life, to the point where Sarah even sent me a message earlier. There was an Atlanta writer, I believe, who had, you know how newspapers will sometimes write obituaries well in advance of people passing?
Well in advance.
They had an obituary written for Hank Aaron in the 70s in case he got killed for breaking Babe Ruth's record. That's insane. That's insane.
You know, sometimes
that was the world in that moment, right?
Yeah, sometimes I'll see an obituary written, and it'll be like, by Bob Baum. I'm like, but he retired like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Remember Bob Baum? He wrote that obituary, you know, for a guy. So you see you see that quite often where, they just, you know, a guy that's been retired wrote an obituary years ago because that's what they do. They prepare for him.
Here's the line I was looking for. I didn't want to butcher it too bad. As he approached the record, there was such tension among his black brave teammates that they joked about not sitting beside him in the dugout for fear an assassin would shoot the wrong player. Jeez. That was from Richard Justice's obituary on MLB.com today. That blew my mind.
Yeah,
you know, it's stories like that, right?
No, just kind of sad that he had, you know, but while breaking one of the most cherished records in baseball, he had so many people that didn't want him to do it and hated him for it and threatened to kill him. I was looking at some of the letters today. Oh, you're coming here. You're going to make it there. You're coming to this town, and we'll be waiting for you. And, I mean, here you are, and, you know, you're just playing the game that you love. So that was the sad part of it. But he lived a great life, and he was a great ambassador for baseball, and he's going to be missed.
That's going to do it for us today on the Burns and Gambo Show. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll see you Monday at 2 here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.